All right, Wednesday night here on the Fan Pregame, Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Another hour for you ahead of another World Series game. We're going to have John Morosi join us at 6:30. We're going to debate the craziest thing that you've ever seen a fan do at a sporting event. You can send that in at 590-590. That's our text line question of the day. But back by popular demand to kick things off for us again is Kevin Plarr. Just can't get enough of us. Welcome back in.
This is great.
Yeah. This is an unprecedented move. I don't think we've ever had a guest do two shows in a row. So we're pretty excited about
it.
Thanks for coming back.
They are, it's like rookie hazing. It's like, I can't say no. I'm new here. Yeah, hey, you want to do radio? Do I have a choice? Yeah, but I actually, like I told you, I enjoy this format.
Perfect.
It's you get to say what you kind of want to say, long form answers. So thanks for having me back.
Nobody's counting you down. Like, hurry up your answer.
Yeah. 3-2. No pitch clock here.
No pitch clock.
We got 15.
Is the pitch clock even going on in the playoffs? But they're not like making a.
Yeah, you don't think about.
Yeah, you don't think about it because I feel like all the other broadcasts, you always kind of see the
well,
ticker.
Did you stop thinking about it as a player?
It's gotten more comfortable. Yeah. It's always in the back of your mind, though. Like, you see it. It's hard not to see it when you're hitting, at least. Like, yeah, I think you're just programmed now. Like, don't get out of the box. Or if you get out of the box, you got to get right back in. Like, it goes quick.
Well, you get the one timeout, and you know, like, when you typically use it. Like, Shohei Ohtani, every time he swings out of his shoes, he immediately uses it. You can kind of pick that up.
Yeah, there's, like, some strategy. I mean, there's certain teams, like, it's as soon as they get two strikes, they call time. You know, I kind of just wanted to. There was no, like, rhyme or reason when I did it. If I needed a break, I took a break. You know, the one time the pitcher might hold for a long time and it makes me feel uncomfortable, I want to have it in my back pocket. I hate to just use it because I got two strikes. But, you know, from a player's perspective, too, like, I'm still not the biggest fan of how quick, especially when you're hitting. It feels really quick, or, you know, when you're running in from the outfield and you're leading off an inning, it's quick. But the overall product of the game is better, and the time we're at the field, the game times are a lot less.
That's a treat for fans.
And for players,
for players too. Good
too, you know? Yeah. It's nice when you have a 6:40 game and, you know, after the game you're eating dinner at, you know, 9:30, 9:40 as opposed to 10:30. And then by the time you either work out or treatment or shower or media, you're not home at 11:30. Like, it's a little bit of a normal, life.
All right. We led this off by asking, and we have a text line that our listeners can send in, like, the craziest thing that you've seen a fan do at a sporting event, obviously inspired by last night's moment. And I was listening to you on the post-game show asking about, you know, Mookie Betts and his demeanor in a sense of how he was able to handle that moment. Let's just start with, like, if it was you, and I know you're normally put in that position, and somebody tries to grab the ball out of your glove. Like, how do you think you would react? Because I think I'd go crazy.
You remember, it was in Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was in the playoffs or regular game. Remember when Miles Straw climbed the fence? We'll have to show that video. But okay. Miles Straw, something happened in left field. Maybe someone threw something on the field, or they threw a ball back and almost hit the left fielder. Miles Straw was in center field, and it was in Yankee Stadium. He, like, climbed up on the wall and he started, like, talking to the fan. Like, didn't physically do anything to him. I would say I'm probably more inclined to do something physical than within that. But
that was crazy, though, right?
Given the magnitude of the situation, World Series, like, I would like to think even my aggressive nature would probably try to stay calm in it, like, knowing the importance of the game. If that's game 8, 101,
right.
120, like,
you're like,
he's coming
whatever.
On the field. He's coming I'm bringing him on the field with me.
Have you ever been close to that? Like, have you had any interactions with fans that, I guess, in your opinion, kind of crossed the line, at least from their standpoint?
No, not physical. I mean, majority of my career was in center, so there's not a lot of, like, room for fans. You know, even in center field, there's typically not fans right behind the center field wall. You know, later when I moved to the corners, you know, I was always dreaming of that play where, like, you go down the line, you got to, like, jump into the stands, you know? Like, I thought it would be awesome. Opportunity never presented itself, but, it was pretty wild. Like, I get being passionate, and I get, you know, wanting your team to win. And I even understand the initial reaction to, like, want to bring home a souvenir or, you know, want to potentially distract the player or, you know, try to make a miss or, more importantly, just get the ball. But it went, you know, it's just crazy that someone, not even a child, but, like, a grown adult, a grown man would feel like that's okay.
I know.
You know?
And I can't believe.
And I mean, honestly, the one was really bad with him trying to take the ball out of his glove, and he's like, I can't get the ball. Let me just take his glove. And then, you know, it, somewhat in self-defense or, you know, reactionary, just trying to secure the ball. The other guy's grabbing his hand. Like, that's where I would more likely probably lose control. Yeah. It's like, you're trying to take the ball, my glove, okay, you know, what's one thing? Then you put your hands on me? Like, it's a fair.
I can't believe the reaction to it has been, like, somewhat mild, right? Like, there are people who support this. Obviously, if you're a Yankees fan, like, I guess you can kind of get behind it because he's on your side. But it feels like an almost apathetic response from a lot of people
where they don't care.
And honestly, I think it sets a pretty crazy precedent. Like, that's one of the worst things, most egregious things I've ever seen in terms of a fan-athlete reaction, and yet it doesn't feel like everyone feels that same way.
I would hope the reason people feel that way is just trying not to give it, you know, light. They're not trying to bring it up because, you know, that's this guy's 20 seconds of fame and, you know.
He's getting more than that. Like, he's getting articles written about him, and he's going to be on some famous podcast watching the game live tonight. Like, it's.
Yeah, it's kind of that part of it is, like, really, really sad to me that somehow potentially even lucrative for him. Like, it'll be a thing he'll make 100%. Money on.
I mean, they'll be sure.
If the Yankees come back and win the World Series, he's going to live forever in Yankees.
I think what I had read is he had tickets for tonight's game, and they banned him from the stadium. So they refund,
Yankees were going to let him come.
And then they refund him his money.
Yeah.
And now, like, I didn't know that part, that he's on some podcast, live stream. Yeah. He's probably making money for it. Like, it's just kind of a sad world that we live in where you could do something so stupid and wrong and, you know, be rewarded for it.
Yeah, the latest update we have in the games, obviously, in 2 hours, was the MLB asked the Yankees to ban them both, both the two season ticket holders. So they'll get a refund. Sorry. And then the tickets have been given to a pediatric cancer patient and his family. So that is
they made good with a bad situation.
That's a very nice
ending. The Yankees needed Major League Baseball to step in to handle the situation kind of tells you everything you need to know about, you know, I don't want to say all Yankee fans, but, you know, what they believe is acceptable in the stadium.
It definitely illustrates the acceptance that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like it's okay. At least they're telling us that it's okay, when really, you know, Major League Baseball having to do the right thing kind of tells you, as you were saying, what needed to happen. Okay, let's talk about the game last night, because the Yankees are alive now after getting the win in game four. Do you have any reason to second guess how the Dodgers approached last night? Like, we've seen it before from the Dodgers where, they just don't have enough starters to actually have the four-man rotation that you'd normally see in the playoffs, but we've seen them kind of not throw games, but not put their best effort forward before, and they got to the World Series. Any reason to second guess what Dave
Robertson? No reason to second guess. They're not doing a bullpen game out of a strategic pitching.
It's the bottom end of the bullpen game.
Like, leaving Honeywell in there to get, like, 1,000 runs off of him, and then the Yankees getting confidence, maybe, like, hitting the some runs.
I don't think the Dodgers are so concerned about that. I think we were talking upstairs. I think what the Dodgers did really well, given their circumstances yesterday, is you would think, okay, they had a bullpen game. And who's going to be available today? Like, they had to throw a lot of pitches, you know. Yeah. You know, a team averages 140 to 200 pitches a game, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. They were able to do that without any of their leverage guys. So, you know, I think there's an immense amount of pressure on Jack Flaherty tonight to pitch well, because they do only have three starters. And he is their ace right now. And he's going up against one of the best pitchers in baseball. And they don't have a bullpen at full strength. Like, he needs to pitch well, and he needs to pitch, you know, at the very least into the fifth inning to, you know, give the Dodgers a real chance to use their leverage guys and not overexert their leverage guys. They don't really have a lot of guys, leverage guys, in the back end of their bullpen that you really feel comfortable pitching more than one inning, you know, maybe a couple outs in the inning before, or, you know, one plus, but they don't really have anyone they feel super confident in allowing them to go out there and pitch two innings. So, you know, I think they did a really good job with that, being able to have a bullpen game and really save a lot of their leverage guys for tonight.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, there's seven games potentially in the series. They have a full complement, or something they'd be really confident in, a starter, and then full complement of relievers six out of the seven times, which just so happens we saw the one where they're not throwing it again, but they can't put their best foot forward because they have to set themselves up potentially for 5, 6, 7. So I get it. I just think it's Dave Roberts playing the hand the best he can, because the hand in his roster is somewhat incomplete despite them being in the World Series.
I mean, if you think about too, where they were at in that game, they were winning for a majority of the game, you know, and the guy who gave up the grand slam is one of their better relievers too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a little bit older now and he's battled a lot of injuries, but Daniel Hudson's closed out a World Series before. He's got really good stuff. That was the guy they actually beat. You know, the thing that happened at the end of the game with Honeywell giving up the 5 runs, that game was kind of already out of hand. He had to do what he needed to do to just record 3 outs and kind of save everyone else. So it wasn't from a lack of not putting the right guys in the right situation. The Yankees just beat a good reliever, and, you know, they were able to get back. The Dodgers were able to score 2 more runs, keep it close, and then the Yankees kind of open it up. And at that point, you never really concede, but you do have to think about tonight's game. You got to think about if there's a potential 6-7, and I think that's what they do a really good job of.
How real is that momentum you think that the Yankees feel tonight? They always say it's like only as good as your next starting pitcher. And we mentioned they got Gerrit Cole. They had those moments last night. They get the grand slam. They get that place rocking. Like, you show up today, can you feel that still? Can you still feel, hey, we got some runs under our belt? You know, even Aaron Judge got an RBI. Like, some of the things that needed to happen, whether they were in garbage time or not. How do you think that they walk into it knowing that they got their best pitcher on the mound and they kind of destroyed the end of that game?
So I think they're feeling very confident because they have Gerrit Cole on the mound and everything that transpired last night. I actually spent a little bit of last night and today actually watching the Red Sox documentary on the comeback.
Perfect timing, too.
It came out this week, but I was trying to find, like, the comparisons between, okay, this team's down 3-0. The Red Sox were down 3-0. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see if there is a story within the story. Let's watch. You know, obviously, I don't know the dynamic of the clubhouse of the Yankees. I've never played with them. Mm-hmm. I've never been inside that clubhouse. But there was something that stood out. It was a quote by Theo Epstein. He said after they won Game 4, and, you know, famously, Kevin Millar went around the field saying, don't let us win. Don't let us win one game. Don't let us win one game, you know. And it's exactly what happened. But his quote was something along the lines of, winning one game gives you momentum, but most importantly, hope. And I think that's what they finally have, is a little bit of hope. And I saw an interview after the game with Alex Verdugo, and he talked about this when Volpe hit the grand slam, that there was, like, this very tangible exhale in the dugout. Like, the weight of the world kind of just fell off their shoulders. Like, they were finally up in a game. They got that really big hit that they've been looking for all series. And that's a scary thing. You know, they're playing with house money. They got the win that they really needed to get. They have their best pitcher, one of the best pitchers in the world, pitching tonight. What we're not talking about, if the Yankees somehow find a way to win, it's a long flight to L.A. Mm-hmm. Winning a game like that and flying to L.A. versus losing a game and flying to L.A., like, that's a huge momentum swing. And, the likelihood of it happening is not great, but it has happened before. A team has come back from 3-0, you know. And I think you show up into the clubhouse, you know, everyone kind of, you know, the Aaron Judge, you know, like, the weight of the world was lifted off of his shoulders when that grand slam happened. Maybe that kind of calms him down, settles him down. Same with guys like Juan Soto. They got so much contribution from the bottom of the lineup yesterday that maybe some of these guys just feel like, we can exhale. And sometimes you just kind of need to conquer the demon in the room. Yeah. You know, sometimes you go into a series thinking, oh, we can beat these guys, and then you lose 3 straight, and then you have, like, this little bit of doubt creeps in. Can we beat these guys? And then you finally do it, and you wake up with this in different perspective. Like, we beat them. Like, it's possible. We just did it. Why not us? Why not today?
Oh, sorry. One thing I noticed that you mentioned about it's never been done before, I thought this stat was, like, really interesting as well. If they were the first team to force a Game 5, so being down 3-0, to avoid a sweep since the 1970s. So even just, like, overcoming the idea of, well, we're down 3-0, like, what kind of effort are we going to show up? Just to be the first team to do that in decades, it's like that Yankee magic in a sense. You got over that hump. Then you look at tonight, it's like, well, we got our best starter on. Like, there's that, if we can get there, whose game is it? But that's that I thought was interesting, that the first time it's been done since the 70s, just to be able to force another game is just a testament to maybe having that fight in them, and then they're going to start to believe and maybe even hope. Okay.
The seed of doubt has to be at least planted if the Yankees get out to a really good start tonight, as you mentioned, with the, you know, the the realities of having to fly home and such. But, you know, you mentioned Jack Flaherty, Kevin, and how important he is tonight. I mean, this is the second go around with all these starters, right? It's almost like the series starts again because you've had the game four that's kind of at least a swing game for the Dodgers. And now the three starters we have seen, we should expect again as long as it goes. The likelihood of Flaherty doing what he did again after the Yankees have had, you know, they've seen the pitching, have been able to scout that pitching now, like how much different is this start for Flaherty as opposed to what it was in game one?
It's a lot different. You know, hitters are really good at making adjustments. Mm-hmm. You know, teams are really good at finding patterns and nuances and tips and every little thing that they could find on this pitcher, you know. And he only has so much in his arsenal. It's not like, you know, overnight he's going to create a new pitch or do something differently. Like, he's been pitching kind of the same way all year, and mm-hmm. it's effective and it's been working. But anytime you face a guy, a starting pitcher, you know, multiple times in the same week, like you can only get a feel for a guy so much on watching the video and mm-hmm. past experience, you know. But when you faced him 5 days ago, you don't really forget what it looks like and how it felt and, you know, how he got you out. And it's a lot easier for the hitter to kind of make the adjustment and counter. Like a pitcher only has so many things he can do.
He's already shown his hand, right?
Yeah, he showed his hand. You could pitch someone differently, but like the movement's always going to be the same on the pitches. The slider's going to move in the same way. The curveball's going to move the same way. The fastball, there's only so many places you can go. As a hitter, you have a little bit of advantage of like, okay, this is how he pitched me. This is how he got me out. This is what the stuff looks like. This is what I need to do. This is how I'm going to be successful. So that's always going to be a challenge for a guy facing a lineup the second time in, you know, within a week.
Is Gerrit Cole slightly more equipped to be different, to be less solvable than Flaherty?
Yes, and there is numbers to back that up, and stay tuned for our show.
Yeah, don't show.
I
don't want to waste all that information that we worked so hard on upstairs. But yes, Gerrit Cole has a history of pitching really well his second time in a series when he faces a lineup, and that's what makes him elite. You know, is once again, he only has so many options, so many pitches he can go to, but he's one of the smartest pitchers in baseball too. He's very smart, and the way that he pitches in game one versus the way he pitches in game two, slightly different. You know, the way he kind of pitched in game one is a little bit more an old school mentality, like here it is, hit it. You know, he has the ability to go out there and not use his full arsenal of pitches and save some stuff mm-hmm. for, you know, game his second time through. And he was able to do that in game one.
We're chatting with Kevin Pillar ahead of game five of the Dodgers Yankees, which will be up on Sportsnet after us. Between Shohei and Aaron Judge, you might even show this graphic as well. Stay tuned on Sportsnet. The numbers are kind of eerily similar in terms of two MVPs that have underperformed. Who's more likely, in your opinion, to break that slump tonight?
I mean, you always have to kind of at least question the health of mm-hmm. Shohei, but
he likes a big moment, though.
Yeah, he does like a big moment. he had a hit yesterday, mm-hmm. and his swing looks fine. Mm-hmm. And we have all these crazy metrics. We listen to the broadcast, talk about his swing speed and all that stuff's about the same. You know, you don't really know, unless you're behind closed doors, how much it's really affecting him. But I like Aaron Judge. I feel like his swing looks like the Aaron Judge swing. You know, I'm trying to like break it down from a mechanical standpoint. Is something wrong, blah, blah. No, his swing's great. He's starting to lay off more pitches. He's getting deeper into counts. You know, even before he had that hit, he got hit by a pitch and he walked. Mm-hmm. He's still getting on base, mm-hmm. you know. And I think, once again, much like the Yankees needed to kind of conquer that fear of the Dodgers and winning that game, Aaron Judge getting that first World Series hit kind of, you know, may settle him down. What seemed like a meaningless hit in that game because it was so out of hand just brings so much confidence to him. He probably drove home, knowing him, probably not driving home. He probably got driven home last night.
He's chauffeured.
Yeah, he got chauffeured home last night and was probably thinking like, that's all he needed, you know. Yeah. You just need that feeling of like, and sometimes it's not even a hit. Sometimes it's just squaring up a baseball and like making a hard out and, you know, he finally squared up a ball, got a hit. You get to round first base, high five the first base coach, take your shin guard off. Yeah. The whole world's watching. There's no better feeling.
It's a cool feeling.
You know, so like, it's a lot different.
That feeling.
It's a lot different than, you know, even that fake hustle turnaround second, then jogging back.
Yeah,
to
he does
dugout.
The big smile.
You know, yeah.
Kind of the frustrated
oh, just
smile.
Missed it. Just missed it. It's like, yeah, they're all telling you good swing. No, I don't want good swing. I want good result. And he finally got a good result, so he's probably feeling pretty good.
Okay, well, I hope you trot out of here just like that.
That's my cue.
That's your cue. We do appreciate you coming on twice in a row. Maybe we get another opportunity if this series extends. We'd love to have you back. If not, enjoy the end of the World Series. And thanks again for coming on with
us.
Yeah,
and happy Halloween.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks,
you have
Kim,
a costume?
Appreciate it.
Do you have a costume?
No, not this year. My kids, they went out on their own this year.
Oh, wow.
So if we do like a family costume, we'll do a family costume.
Okay.
But one wanted to be Optimus Prime, and my daughter wanted to be a witch. So.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, you're a broadcaster now. That's
I'll just
yours.
I'll just fly home in this
just,
tomorrow.
Just take that from Sports Style.
Thank you,
perfect.
Guys.
Thank you so much, Kevin. That's Kevin Pillar, MLB outfielder, joining us here at Sportsnet. So we've got Game 5 tonight, Dodgers and Yankees. It'll be up at 7:30 for the pregame on Sportsnet. You can listen to it in the alt stream, too, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But we do have a Raptors game up tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Biggest news for that is unfortunate for Raptors fans. Scotty Barnes diagnosed with a right orbital fracture from an elbow in the face from Jokic on Monday. And he's going to be reassessed in 3 weeks. So another tough blow for the Raptors. And the season is young. And they've already had lots of injury concerns. No Quickly, no Kelly Olynyk or Bruce Brown. And RJ Barrett's back.
Yeah.
But it's like these moving puzzle pieces you can't put in at the same time.
Yeah, maybe you can get all the bad luck out of the way before you want to be competitive. I guess that's the thing you're hoping for. But it is somewhat problematic. I mean, how do we preface the season? It has to be about Scotty Barnes and Emmanuel Quickly showing that they are part of the solution moving forward, that they can be a partnership that this organization can build on in a major, major way. And through four games, they've barely shared the court together. And now Scotty's going to be out even longer than, you know, we're expecting Manuel Quickly to come back for. So, yeah, they've had zero overlap to this point, and they're probably going to go, first 6 weeks of the season without having any meaningful overlap. That's problematic if you're figuring out if they're going to be really good together moving forward.
That's questioning that the tank could be closer than you think.
That would be the optimist's viewpoint there, though. It's like, you got an excuse to be bad if being bad is what you planned on all along.
Okay, a couple other NBA notes. Looks like Bronny is going to play in Cleveland tonight for the continuous return of the LeBron Bronny, I guess, spectacle.
Yep.
It's like when the circus comes to town.
The first circus,
the CNE,
since the opening night circus.
Yeah. It's like the CNE coming to town. Bronny getting another opportunity. And maybe it's better. Like, honestly, I'm going to just try for a second to be an optimist or a relatable to Bronny. That's got to be tough. You know, you're going in and your home opener, the opener with your dad, and you're clearly not up to the skill level of the other players on the court. And maybe you're just like along for the ride, but now you get to do it again. The Band-Aid is ripped off. Like, maybe there's less pressure for him coming into it because
it's
the second opportunity.
There won't be, because all these appearances for him, and it's kind of like a paid appearance, is the vanity play for LeBron James, which is, oh, we're back in Cleveland. You were born in Cleveland.
Yeah, we're going
to
see photos of him as a baby.
We got to get picked in Cleveland. We got to do the content play in Cleveland just as we did it on opening night. Next time, when they're in Miami first, I'm sure there's going to be content plays in Miami. We're going to go through all of LeBron James's chapters in his career so we can include his son in them.
Well, guess where they play next? In Toronto on Friday night.
And I bet he won't play because there's no history other than LeBronto.
LeBronto. And LeBron loves coming up to Toronto.
Bronny, maybe some meaningful minutes against a banged up Raptors
team. We actually might see him. So whatever. Nonetheless, keep your eye on some Bronny Braun content tonight. All right, we're going to do some best bets for the World Series on the other side of the break. We're taking your text at 590-590. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen a fan do at a sporting event? I mean, last night wins for me. I saw a fake proposal once that ended up going viral that I thought was real in the moment. And the girl like slapped the guy. Yeah, it was at the Rogers Center.
Content play too.
And I was like, what is this? And then I saw it online like blowing up later. And I was almost in the image that he like proposed and she slapped him with beer or something. So anyway, send us a message. 59590, standard message, data rates apply. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side with John Morosi to keep teeing up tonight's Game 5.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A little later on, Dodgers-Yankees Game 5. It'll be up here on Sportsnet and on the alt stream on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Raptors and Hornets on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet Ontario. But busy, busy night, all eyes on the Bronx. Is there a miracle brewing? Could this still be the best World Series yet? Like, there's still hope. This is maybe what we thought, oh, 3-0 is going to be a sweep, and then they draw you back in, it goes to game 7, and then what happens? That's still to be written. Let's bring in John Morosi of MLB Network to help us tee it up. John, how are we?
Hey, it's Justin, I'm outstanding. And didn't we see this in the Stanley Cup Final?
We sure did.
It was a 3-0 to a 3-3 and a great game 7. We can see it again, just twice in a span of about 6 months. Why not?
Well, we asked this question yesterday, like, do the Yankees have Oilers in them, Oilers blood in them? Is there something that can push them to a game 7? And they have superstars and they have talent and they have a little magic around them. So, you know, can they Oiler themselves to a game 7?
Ehlers, I think they can. They can at least win tonight, which is what's in front of us. And you think about the pitching matchup, Gerrit Cole versus Jack Flaherty. I would say Cole was at least as impressive as Flaherty the first time they matched up in the series back in game 1. And I think the larger point, Ehlers, in terms of how close together these two teams are, is this. They have both scored 18 runs in this series, and they are both batting as a team 206, a robust 206 on each side of this World Series. And when you look at those numbers, I realize that's kind of top line and very basic. But what we're saying here is it's a very even series, and without that one swing from Freddie Freeman, of course, the proud son of Peterborough and Windsor, then they would be exactly even probably at 2 games apiece. So it's been a quite even series. And for that reason, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Yankees find a way to win tonight and maybe their bats keep waking up in the way they did in the latter stages of game 4.
And it's almost as though we just kind of start over here, right, John? Like, obviously, there's a 3-1 lead for the Dodgers, but we get maybe the same pitching matchup for the final 3 games, potentially, of this series. And you're right, 206 batting average. Like, to this point, you know, the starters, which were much maligned in some ways entering the season, have done quite well. Jack Flaherty definitely chief among them. But now that these two superstar-laden lineups have already seen Rodon, and Cole, and Schmidt, and Flaherty and Yamamoto and Walker Buehler, like, how different will it potentially look as long as it lasts now that there's an influx of information and these starters have to repeat what they've already done against really, really good lineups?
Excellent point. And I do think that the more you get into the series, the more it does advantage the hitters because they've got more of a Rolodex of those at-bats to draw upon as they get ready for those key late-game confrontations. And I think more than anything else, the Yankees just confidence-wise are a different team than they were 24 hours ago. Mm-hmm. They now have that belief, whether it's Austin Wells, whether it's Anthony Volpe having the grand slam and the big moment for him. I think Judge's at-bats have gotten better. Soto's at-bats have been pretty consistently good all postseason long. And Gleyber Torres, for the most part, has been pretty good this postseason. So this is all in addition to Stanton. So when you start going down the list, I do think that it will advantage the pitchers, though, big picture, those that have more and different and diverse ways to get outs. Maybe in that sense, Yamamoto, who at the moment is lined up to pitch game 6, he does have that sort of array of pitches that would allow him, I think, to have success a second time through. But I think for these reasons, you think about the way that Jack Flaherty struggled in his start in New York against the Mets in the NLCS. And I think that data point to me bodes very well for the Yankees' efforts to try to bring the series back to LA for game 6.
I know it's a 3-0 series when the game kind of gets out of control yesterday. But do you have any questions or quibbles with how the Dodgers approached the end of that game. I know that letting the bats get hot, that might happen regardless, but all of the Yankees kind of are feeling good about themselves, as you mentioned, coming into tonight, and they got some runs on the board, but the Dodgers did keep some of their high leverage arms to themselves. So the way it played out, is that just in favor of the Dodgers having that advantage?
Yeah, it's a great point, and I know there's been a lot of conversation about the way that the Dave Roberts manages Penn. I actually didn't have an issue with it. He started Kasperius, who gave him a fine start. He was an opener. If there's one issue, maybe I would have said to let Kasperius pitch a little bit longer if I was really concerned about how much coverage I had going back. But Hudson gave up the grand slam to Volpe. Hudson's been a guy that's thrown the last pitch of a World Series before. He's a pretty accomplished major league relief pitcher. And then Knack came in and actually pitched pretty well in the middle stage of that game. I do think it got away from them late when Honeywell came in. There was nobody there behind him. That was where basically Dave Roberts said, it's your inning. And I'm sorry, I don't have anybody else that I can call upon right now. So that was maybe the one stage really late in the game. But at that point, it's a 6-4 game, which is I think, to the credit of the Dodgers for getting it to that point. But you're also not going to spend a Michael Kopech when you're down two runs in that situation. I just don't think there was enough hope at that moment to spend your best guys. So we'll see how things unfold tonight. But I really don't think that Dave Roberts deserves much, if any, criticism for the way that he deployed his bullpen in game four. It just was not the Dodgers' night.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because it's a World Series game. You can win the World Series. The game is really right there. But if you make the mistake of using and burning some of those guys, it affects tonight, could affect the rest of the series,
right?
Could be the difference in winning the series. I mean, you got to give Dave Roberts credit for the way he handled it versus the Mets. He's doing the exact same thing, and why mess with something that worked, I suppose, even though it's the World Series. It's a bit strange to wrap your head around, but it's worked so far for the Dodgers. It's worked. Everything's worked for Freddie Freeman. An unbelievable World Series, maybe the best since Madison Bumgarner, maybe the best since who in terms of being a batter, in terms of other non-pitchers. Like, can you remember someone who's done what Freeman's done in recent history, John?
Well, I love it that, of course, it was the record that he briefly shared with George Springer in terms of home runs in consecutive World Series games, and now the record belongs to Freddie Freeman himself. It's amazing, I think, too, Justin, when you peel back the layers of his October, of his season overall, in that he was basically playing on one leg throughout the entire NL playoffs. And there were some games where he wasn't able to play because the ankle pain was so severe. And as he told Ken Rosenthal a couple of days ago, the time off was very good for him. He was able to rest the ankle, actually work on his swing. And I'm happy for a variety of reasons for him in this World Series. Obviously, he went through a very difficult time with his family this summer, where his young son was in the hospital because of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Very scary time for Freddie and his family. But I think this World Series, because of the stage, because of all the focus on it, Judge, Ohtani, all this galaxy of stars, that Freeman, for whom his calling card was always consistency. He was not someone that we talked about as having these five or six moments that came right off the tip of your tongue that explained why he was so great. He had them, but he did it in his own Freddie Freeman professional, understated way. There's nothing understated about homering in the first four games of a World Series. And so we're going to remember this forever. And in addition to the game one being one of the best World Series games that we've ever seen. And so now, years from now, when he, which is certain, will be a Hall of Famer, this World Series is going to play in that highlight reel. We're watching it happen right now. And for me, as someone who I've been able to cover Freddie for a long time, fantastic person on and off the field. I have immense respect for him. So just as a fan of the game, and someone who really has a lot of time for Freddie as a person, it gives me joy that fans around the world are now seeing him in his full splendor in a way that I think is going to be an iconic part about the way that his career is remembered.
Yeah, he's undoubtedly the MVP favorite in the whole series and specifically for the Dodgers. But let's look on the other side. Like, obviously, there's lots of winning to be done. But I like what Anthony Volpe did last night, and I like his story. He's the 23-year-old kid that grew up loving the New York Yankees, and his city loves him back, and there's just so much emotion around his story. And obviously last night was a big statement moment for him, But does he have maybe that storybook in him as well of a guy that you want to see maybe be the helper to get the Yankees to the finish line?
He could, and I think that certainly he's going to have to build that legend over the next couple of games. But Eilish, to your point, you get the grand slam yesterday, and he's the kind of player, and actually Pedro Martinez of MLB Network made this point, that he's someone that you would look to be able to break out in a game like this because he can win in different ways. Really good defender, good base runner, despite the one miscue yesterday. And, of course, the power showed up as well. And it is Eilish. It's a great story for Yankee fans. I spoke during the ALDS in Kansas City with his parents, Michael and Isabel, both of whom are doctors, by the way, super impressive family. And his mother was born in the Philippines, moved to the U.S. as a girl. And so the Yankees and baseball were a part of how she, I think, got comfortable in New York and really got to know her new country. And now, of course, the family is thriving here in New York, which is pretty special to see. I think, too, they used to go on dates. They told me the story. They used to go on dates as a couple, Michael and Isabel, in the bleachers when they were in medical school together. And so now the bleacher creatures are chanting their son's name.
That's crazy.
Pretty amazing, right? So, I mean, talk about a full circle moment. So it's an easy story to root for. And I think at the end of the day, the Yankees were not as bad as the 3-0 deficit looked. Mm-hmm. If we're being fair, we're one Freddie Freeman away from it being 2-1 at that point in time and now being potentially 2-2. But this series has been much closer than what the overall top line 3-1 indicates. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if Volpe and Stanton and maybe Judge, we still got one of the best hitters of our lifetimes who really hasn't checked into the series in a meaningful way. What happens if he gets hot all of a sudden? And Ohtani, by the way, I think because of the shoulder, really isn't himself at this moment. So as far as I'm concerned, there's still a lot of baseball left to be played here.
All right, John, I got to ask you about Austin Capobianco. I didn't think I'd have to, but here we are after last night. I'm curious, though, with you, because there's a journalistic responsibility here to tell the story of the game for you and your colleagues, of course. And in a lot of ways, that was part of the story of the game. It will be in Yankees lore forever if they complete this comeback.
Even if they don't.
But it also, and even if they, even if they don't. But it's also something, you know, that gives a microphone and time to someone who did something that's objectively bad for baseball. Like, you can't have people doing what they did to Mookie Betts last night. And if you give them that platform, then other people will crave that platform and maybe we'll see more of this. So how do you guys in baseball media sort of balance, hey, we're telling this story, but we also understand what comes with a story like this and, you know, what could potentially follow?
No, it's a really fair question and it's an important one. I clearly what happened in that game was not okay, period. And I think it's been observed in our modern culture, media culture, social media culture, that the line between fame and infamy is increasingly blurred. And that's a problem. That's a problem. We in the media, at least, and all of us in our own ways, we all have our own responsibility to teach and to convey that which is laudable and that which should be discouraged and blatantly said that this is not acceptable. What happened last night was not acceptable. The Yankees obviously have made their own statement indicating that the offending fans in this case, both of them will not be allowed to attend tonight's game in any way, shape, or form, which I think at the minimum is what's expected here. And I think it's up to all of us that whether we attend games as fans or as reporters or whatever our capacity is, I think most importantly, those of us who are parents have an obligation to set the right example and to explain what is appropriate conduct and what's not. So it's interesting. Actually, earlier this week, I was actually speaking with one of my daughter's classes at school about when you've got your credential and what the responsibilities are. And actually on the back of our credentials, all of us that have ever been attending games, there are criteria that we have to follow. And honestly, it's no different for fans. You can certainly cheer and do things as a fan that you wouldn't do as a journalist, but decency should be, if not the explicit idea, the implicit rule of everybody that sets foot in a ballpark to be respectful. And I think those criteria, those things you hear in the loudspeaker of a hockey venue or a baseball venue should not just be glossed over. they should be understood and expected and really conveyed to the next generation about what we're all supposed to do for the privilege, not the right, but the privilege to be able to watch games and be part of the sports community.
It really is no fault, though, on those who did tell that story. I mean, when I was in a similar position, there was like a viral moment when I was covering a game, and I was asked why I didn't cover that specific thing. And it's just weighing what you think is best at the time. And that was definitely a story, and it had to be covered just like the final score had to be covered. So again, it's a tough one. And it's just the way, I guess, everybody else responds after it happens. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. I think it's our journalistic responsibility to ask you, though, just about the health of Shohei Ohtani. We see him sort of bracing his own arm when he's either on first base or in other positions when he's not, you know, actively holding a bat over his shoulder. How healthy is Shohei with your understanding, John?
You can tell that he's compromised on some level. To what percent, it's probably difficult for any of us to know what that number is. But we can read body language and we could read swings. And certainly even before the injury happened, he wasn't having a robust offensive World Series. And again, this is a small sample size, obviously, for what we're talking about. But he's clearly not fully himself. To his credit, he wants to be out there with his team, which you admire, that he's putting his body at risk to be able to be there and be accountable to his team. And certainly he's already been that. He's rehabbed this arm surgery in the midst of a 50-50 season. He doesn't have to answer any questions to anybody, as far as I'm concerned, about his professionalism or his willingness and desire to be out there and play. But you can definitely tell that he is not himself. And the big question I'm going to have going forward now is, what does that mean about how the Yankees approach him? Now, clearly, he was walked earlier in the series, even at Yankee Stadium, when we're still wondering exactly how dangerous of a hitter he actually is in this present moment. So if I'm the Yankees, I would basically attack him maybe in the zone a bit more than you would have otherwise, and then let him show you that he's fully back and able to do damage on certain pitches. Because it was interesting watching the broadcast, John Smoltz made this point, I believe, that for him, probably swinging and missing is more painful than swinging and connect. And so when you think about if he's got a lunge for a down and away pitch, it's going to be pretty uncomfortable. So it's at this point, it's up to the Yankees to try to attack that as much as they can. And they got somebody on the mound in Gerrit Cole who knows how to place the ball with very good precision. So I think it's going to be a tough matchup tonight for Shohei.
Yeah, they're set up well to make this series extend. So hopefully we get a chance to chat with you well before it all ends or to wrap it all up, John. Appreciate you coming on. Enjoy tonight's game, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it, as always. Thank you.
Thanks so much. John Morosi of MLB Network. We've got some breaking news, folks. The Toronto Maple Leafs have traded Timothy Liljegren to the San Jose Sharks in exchange for a third-round pick in the 2025 NHL entry draft and San Jose's own sixth-round selection in 2026, and defenseman Matt Benning, who is a 30-year-old from Alberta, went to Northeastern and has played 464 NHL games.
Sounds like he was in your circuit there.
Yeah, he would have been in my circuit. I don't know much about Matt Benning, okay. But he comes from a family of NHL defensemen.
Yeah, I know he's a serviceable guy. I mean, Timothy Liljegren is definitely the best defenseman in this trade, but Matt Benning is not just some schmo who we'll never see. Like, there's a potential for Matt Benning to play a role on this team. But for the Maple Leafs, you know, I guess, right? There was this incoming cap crunch. What are they going to do with all these bodies? What are they going to do with Timothy Liljegren? Do they have to retain salary on a Liljegren trade because there's no interest elsewhere? Like, we always kind of joked, oh, San Jose exists. They'll take on Timothy Liljegren. And they did here for the price of a third-round pick and a sixth-round selection. I just think this is a Dubas body who wasn't going to fit a Treliving Berube scheme, and it had to happen eventually for the Leafs to actually get something in return. I think that's okay. It's not the best asset management in the world, but at some point you have to not worry about asset management and just make sure that you have a roster that fits what you're trying to do. And Liljegren just simply did not the moment Craig Berube arrived.
Yeah, it just felt like the writing was kind of on the wall and him not getting in the lineup and seeing even Connor Timmins be pretty decent in our opportunities to watch him play. It felt like it was time for a change. And he's headed to sunny San Jose.
Get a lot of playing time
and
there.
That's exactly it. Like, he's going to play, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to prove everyone wrong. And maybe he does that, and maybe he doesn't. And maybe Matt Benning has some upside himself. He's played a lot of NHL games and played for the Oilers, the Preds, and the Sharks. So we'll get to know more about Matt Benning, of course, as we move forward. I'm sure Kipper and Warren will have a great Leafs hour on it tomorrow, and the Leafs are in action tomorrow against the Kraken. So we'll be sure to tee all that up.
And while I think it's a positive move, it should be sort of, you know, it should be said that Brad Tre Living extended Timothy Liljegren by 2 years.
Correct. For $3 million, was it?
$3 million. And it was probably a move that he felt, okay, if it's not working out or we decide to go in a different direction, this is a tradable asset. And I think he probably overestimated how tradable it was in the end. But yeah, again, asset management in this case, not perfect, but a move that probably had to be made.
Okay, we got a couple more minutes. Oh, I had my mic off.
You did.
It's all good. I'm just thinking over here about Matt Benning and Timothy Liljegren. Okay, we've got a couple minutes here to do some best bets for tonight. I realize now, before I submitted it to our lovely producer, that it's the Hughes Bowl tonight.
Okay.
So my side bet for everyone is all the Hughes brothers to get a point. Tonight, Devils at Canucks. If you put Jack, Quinn, and Luke in some points, 320-ish. I'm pretty sure the last time they played, I made this bet, and I was like, something went just, I just missed one thing. But, you know, they're going to want to show up and play hard together. So that's one thing there. My best bet for tonight from the MLB Game 5 of the World Series is over. Just feel like, and I think you're
It's live. Over or the over?
The over.
Okay.
Because I think, and I won't take your words out of your mouth, but it's going to be kind of a funky one. Like, it might get a
Did
little.
Did I say that?
Yeah, upstairs.
I said funky?
Maybe you said loose, wild.
Yeah, something around
whatever.
That.
Whatever. I'm not a thesaurus.
I'm like, just saying funky is not generally in my lexicon,
okay,
but go on.
Well, I think it might be a funky one, and I think there could be some runs scored tonight. So the over is set at 8.5, but you could even use a Justin's ladder.
Oh, break out the ladder. You want to borrow it?
You don't even have one. Plus 200.
Strapped to my car right
to
now.
To get yeah. over 10.5. I also like Volpe to get a home run. I think he's got some value just around 10-1 there. And last night was special. I know he's not hitting those all the time, but maybe he rides a little momentum after last night. So I don't know who's going to win the game, but I think it will be funky. All right?
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Grab a collection of 8, 9, 10-1 home run hitters tonight. I think there could be a few leaving the yard, and maybe that's the best way to just spam some bets and hopefully you hit one. But I do like Volpe at that price as well. We've been talking about, you know, Jack Flaherty, how good he was in the first game and how much of a challenge it's going to be. Did so with Kevin Pillar and John Morosi, and that's the way I'm leaning. Like, we saw it with Flaherty in the NLCS, was great against the Mets in the first time around, really struggled the second time around. So I'm finding ways to attack Jack Flaherty just like the Yankee batters will. So Yankees team total over 4.5 is plus 105. Gonna play that. Soto home run plus 320.
Sounds
gonna
funky.
Play that, but I don't. This is a funky one here.
Oh, you're buying in now.
I think that Gerrit Cole gives the Yankees the advantage early on over Flaherty. Like, the Yankees could jump out to an early lead, but I don't think the Dodgers are just gonna, you know, send Honeywell out there to finish the
I
game.
I hope not.
And take it back to LA. So let's try a Yankees win the first five, Dodgers win the full game at
That's
9
what I meant.
To
That's
1.
Funky.
That is funky. I admit that is fairly funky. Because I think Gerrit Cole has the advantage early, but I actually have a sneaking suspicion the Dodgers are going to win this game. So we're going to try it that route. 9-1, Yankees first five, Dodgers complete the five-game series victory in the World Series.
Ooh, okay. I kind of want to see more baseball, but I don't want, like, I don't want the Yankees to win.
Okay.
So I could.
So you want cake and eat it too.
Here's the perfect situation. Here's the perfect situation. We let the Yankees win tonight. That's fine. Then the Dodgers go home and they win it at home in front of their own crowd. Because they always love that.
Yeah, it's nice. But New York's a good place to win too.
Yeah.
It depends on who you're beating in their own barn.
I looked this up and it was a question we had off air. And I think some people have been thinking about it as well. Freddie Freeman is the MVP right now. But let's say the Yankees storm back and win somehow, and there's not like a definite person. Only one time ever has somebody done what McDavid did last year, which was win the Conn Smythe and lose. It happened to Bobby Richardson of the Yankees, who won their MVP in 1920 but lost the World Series.
We might have to figure out, we could ask John, how the voting actually goes down. Because, yeah, if it's tight, Game 7, Freddie's done Freddie things, that might be the case.
It's an interesting thing to think about. All right. Woof. Go get some baseball action. And you can also watch the Raptors on Sportsnet Ontario as well. Have a great night, everybody.